Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're going to switch subjects and talk about the movie Captain Fantastic with its creator. Fantastic, I should say. Coming up in just a moment, you can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Kids raised in the woods, off the grid, coming face to face with a society that most of the rest of us know. That is among the themes of the movie Captain Fantastic, wowing crowds and critics on several continents. Viggo Mortensen is the star and best-known face of the film, but its creator is Matt Ross, accomplished actor and director and graduate of Ashland High School. He came back to town for a benefit event with his movie last night for the Ashland Independent Film Festival, and he's here now in our studio. Matt Ross, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You have the acting resume here is rather endless and relentless. I mean, look at the things besides Silicon Valley, which I've been watching lately. American Horror Story, Revolution, Magic City, Ring of Fire, Big Love, Just Shoot Me, CSI Miami, Rose Red, on and on and on. So all kinds of stuff over the years. When you were here in Ashland in high school, was that where your interest in theater started?
Yeah. I grew up here. We also lived in England for a time. I did local theater here at the festival, and I also made short films at the same time with my friends, kind of doing them both at the same time.
Do you have family in Ashland anymore?
Yeah, my mom lives here.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So you have a place to stay.
It's her birthday today. Happy birthday, Mom.
Happy birthday, Mom. Yeah. Captain Fantastic, for those of us alive in the 70s, did the title come from the Elton John album?
No, in fact, I mean, I've been asked that before. People, I would say, of a certain age, though you look younger than
why,
than
thank you. They,
I would say people who are 65 and over reference that album. But no, in fact, only after I gave the script to my mother, at one point she said, "Can I read what you're working on?" And I gave it to her, and she said, "Oh, the Elton John album." And I said, "What Elton John album?" She had that album. Since then, my editor, or it's not my editor, the editor I've used before, both my films, Joseph Krings, gave me the album, and Captain Fantastic and the Dirt Brown Cowboy. It has nothing to do with the film, frankly. The lyrics to that particular song nor the album itself have anything to do with the film. I just thought somehow it had been in my subconscious. I mean, clearly it's, you know, that title had existed before, but I wasn't aware of it consciously.
The really interesting thing about that album is not so much what's on it as what it did. It was one of those rare albums that debuted at number one because Elton John was so huge at that time. I remember hearing about that. But, yeah, most of the songs, I think, are... What? Which one?
Yeah.
Not like
Goodbye
Yellow Brick Road, for
exactly.
example.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. That's true. Yeah.
All right. So I got the basic outline. It's a family living way out in the boonies, off the grid. Mm-hmm. I mean, where did the idea come from and where did it go from there?
Well, there are a lot of elements that are semi-autobiographical, but it's far less about that and far more aspirational, I would say. The personal is not always the autobiographical, as I like to say. You know, the genesis of it was really being a father. You know, I have two kids. My daughter's now 13 and my son is 9. And I think when I was writing it, I was grappling a lot with what my values were and what I wanted to pass on to my children. And I was very conscious of how brief the time is that they're in our house and wanted to take advantage of that. I travel a lot and I struggle, like we all do, to be present with my kids. You know, we all are pulled between our professional and personal lives. We all live in a culture now with mobile offices, you know, where we are constantly on our phones and our computers, and you know, we're all expected to answer our emails at a moment's notice and texts, and you know, and we conduct business at the dinner table, and you know, we all do that, and well, we don't in my house actually.
Good.
Phones are not allowed at the dinner table, but you know, that's a push and pull that we all have, and I think I was really thinking a great deal about all those things, and the film posits a family that practices a form of extreme conscious parenting, I guess. And I, you know, I think films are a good medium for asking a lot of questions, providing a bunch of information that's there for you to draw your own conclusions. And it asks a lot of questions. I had a lot of questions as a father, and I wanted to ask them in the form of a narrative or put them into a narrative.
The collision of kids who have explored a lot about themselves with a world that often hasn't is a really interesting setup. We have a clip that I wanted to play the audio from.
Okay.
It's called Lovebirds. Can you give us any setup before we play it? It's where the kids come back after an evening together.
I think it's, I didn't title it Lovebirds, so I'm not sure, but I believe it's George Mackay, who plays the oldest son, Bodovan, and at one point when they leave their... they leave their sort of self-contained paradise and they go on a little road trip, a journey, that's precipitated by a tragic event that happens. It's, you can kind of ascertain what happens by the trailer, but I don't want to reveal it in case anyone hasn't seen the film yet. And they go out into the world, and he, the oldest son meets a young woman, and they have sort of an interaction. I believe this is what this is.
All right, so here's the clip from Captain Fantastic.
It's almost midnight. I sincerely hope you two lovebirds haven't been doing what I think you've been doing.
I know what you think, but I know that your daughter has taught me many things just now. She has broadened my mind. She has helped me grow. When we just kissed for the first time just then, the endorphins that your daughter sent through my body were like dolphins swimming through my bloodstream. The way she has opened me up, she has penetrated deep inside of me, and I know that I have penetrated deep, deep inside of your daughter. And not like that. I would love to, when is necessary, for I want kids someday. Not right now, of course, but when you're ready, when I'm ready, because I think this should be a shared decision. This is a decision that we should make together. But when you are ready, I will be ready. I am ready for you, if you will have me. Claire. What's your last name?
McCune.
Claire McCune. Will you be my wife?
Okay, funny man. I'm sure your dad's waiting up.
George MacKay did most of the talking there. Some Captain Fantastic. Matt Ross, the director and writer, is here in the studio with me on the Jefferson Exchange. That's a great example of things that are often not present in movies anymore. Mm. A long silence, being allowed to rest like that, and the great tension that builds up from it.
Yes, well, I'm glad you see it that way. There are a lot of examples of that in the film. I certainly like that. You know, I love films. I was saying last night that we did a Q&A after the screening, and I was saying last night that I love films that don't tell me what to think and feel every moment, you know, that allow me to observe, actually allow me to read the film the way you read a book in a way, you know, watch people's behavior and nonverbal communication can provide a great deal of information and allow you to read the film. I think that we've become accustomed to certain kind of entertainment, a certain kind of filmmaking. Popular commercial cinema frequently tells us what to think and feel at every moment. In fact, it does even more than that. It says, this is about to happen. It says it's happening. And then it says, did you see what just happened? And personally, I find that condescending. So I try and avoid that in my own work.
I have an email here from Sue, no town given. She says, please relay to Matt how much my friends and I loved Captain Fantastic. The audience applauded at the end, and we think he should get an Academy Award.
Wow. From your lips to the great goddess in the sky. Thank you for that.
And a call from John in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Matt Ross.
Oh, well, hi. I'm so pleased to be able to tell Mr. Ross how much I enjoyed his film, too. Just great experience to watch it.
Thank you.
I was particularly impressed with the script and wanted to ask Mr. Ross if he could talk about, was he able to use that script to get such heavy-hitting actors? He got some Viggo Mortensen, I mean, Frank Langella, wow. Was that allowed him to get such good people? Was the script itself?
First off, thanks for your kind words. And yes, I think so. You know, I've made one film, previous to this called 28 Hotel Rooms, but it was a small, intimate film and was not widely seen. So they hadn't seen it before. I don't think they knew my work as an actor, either of them. And so yes, I assume, that it was the screenplay that they, I actually know with, you know, with Viggo, I think that he's very choosy and he chooses films that, as he would say, and I've heard him say this very frequently, he chooses films that he would like to see himself as an audience member. That's really one of the ways that he chooses. And, So I believe it was the screenplay.
I recognize the voice of that John. He can be very cruel on films, I find.
But really?
So yes, the fact that he praised yours is high praise indeed.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you.
So was Viggo Mortensen the guy you had your eye on from the beginning?
No, I mean, when I was writing it, I don't really have an actor in mind. I've said this frequently. I think for this particular film, I sort of had Harrison Ford in the day, because I think when I was a young man, when I was in junior high, he seemed to be in every movie, and he represented a certain kind of masculinity that I found very appealing. He was capable and strong and intelligent and also vulnerable, and I thought that was very, you know, it was very evocative. And so I had that, but you know, he's now, I believe he's in his 70s, but he's, you know, certainly too old to play the role. So I don't have anyone in mind when I write. And for this one, I didn't as well. I think it's somewhat of a fool's errand insofar as you never know who you will have access to. And then, if you do have access to these people, you have no idea who will be available. So when it came time to decide, who we were going to offer to, Viggo was my first choice. I think his work, is incredible. You know, I've been a fan of his work since going back to The Indian Runner. If anyone hasn't seen that film, it's a remarkable film, and his performance in it is astonishingly good. And he's just, he brings such gravitas and integrity to everything he does. I think we're defined so much by what we choose to do as what we choose not to do, and his choices speak volumes, and I wanted to selfishly align myself with that kind of artist.
And you're getting great responses. I mean, are you kind of a little bowled over by how good it's been?
Sure. You never know how people are going to respond. I mean, on one hand, I really have to remove myself emotionally. After Sundance, I stopped reading reviews because it's an emotional roller coaster. It really is. When people are, you know, when they praise it, I feel wonderful. And when they, you know, are critical or dislike it, I feel gutted or devastated. And so after a while, you become numb to that, but you really have to allow people to have their own emotional response or intellectual response and remove yourself from that equation. And, but I am, in answer to your question, always very pleased, obviously, when people give me, you know, are positive about it. It's great.
No doubt. A call from Andrew in Ashland. Welcome to The Exchange with Matt Ross.
Hi, Matt. I was at the screening last night. Loved the film. And my question is also about the script.
Yeah.
Or more about how you learned screenwriting.
Sure.
The film, you know, you talked about the silences and those kinds of things that were unconventional. But at the same time, it's just a really tightly told story. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like very economical. You know, I hope you take this as a compliment. Almost,
I do.
Almost like a Pixar screenplay. Mm. You know, just a really well told story. And I was wondering, I actually teach filmmaking at SOU, and so I was interested for my students' sake. You know, what advice would you give to someone who wants to learn how to write a screenplay so well?
All right, thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew. Well, I do take that as the highest compliment you could give me. Actually, I think Pixar is and it's an extraordinary place. I take my kids to all of their films, and, you know, speaking briefly about Pixar, you know, the thing that they do that's unique is that they, as I'm sure you know, and I only know this by reading about it, but they have a brain trust where they invite everyone in, and they work on the screenplays and the films themselves until they're happy with them, and then they release them. So they don't have a pre-release schedule built into it. So, you know, what you see is, a real degree of craft in everything they do. And, I believe in craft and structure. So I'm happy that I've identified that. I think that my first film was much more experimental, but, I spent a lot of time thinking about building the house, you know, before we, or I should say planning the house before we build it. And then once you get there, you can allow people to push and pull the narrative, however you want. But, I had honed the screenplay, for a long time. And, you know, people think of screenplays frequently, they think of the dialogue because that's what they hear on, you know, the rest is invisible. The prose, the structure, the bones of it are invisible. And it takes someone probably like yourself to identify, those elements. In terms of advice, you know, my advice, which is probably dissimilar from others, I think it's worthwhile reading everything. I have read probably every screenplay book out there. Some of them speak to me and some don't. You know, I know people reference Robert McKee's book Story. I found that somewhat flummoxing. I think there's things in there that I identified, but it didn't resonate for me personally. John Truby has a book. Blake Snyder has a bunch of books that, you know, and all these books have been criticized for creating cookie cutter narratives. And I think that criticism is fair. I think that really it's not dissimilar, to, the language actors speak, which is we use this language only when we need to, so that a lot of these things happen intuitively. I think that when I need to speak with actors about how to work a moment, it's the language we have, the language we share, is something we use to problem solve. And ultimately, the same thing is true for screenplay writing. I think that a lot of it is intuitive, but you do need to know the rules, I believe, of 3-act or 5-act structure, depending on how you define it, before you break them.
Well, sounds like they work for you well in Captain Fantastic. Matt Ross, writer, director of the film, and an Ashland native. Thanks for joining us in The Exchange today.
Thanks for having me.